Radio 7 Costa Blanca, el sol de tu radio.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you, you answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes. People eat marshmallow pies. Everyone smiles as you drift past the flowers that grow so incredibly high. Newspaper taxis appear on the shore, waiting to take you. Train in a station with plasticine pauses with looking glass ties. Suddenly someone is there at the turnstile. The girl with kaleidoscope eyes.
It became the John, Paul, George and Ringo Show. It's January 1971. In the High Court, a month earlier, Paul McCartney has filed a suit demanding the dissolution of the Beatles, a group which he maintains, to all intents and purposes, is finished, as they neither record nor appear together anymore. John, George and Ringo contest his action, but nevertheless, they're all very busy with their many personal activities, and some very good solo albums have already been released, with more to follow in the coming year. Part 12, The John, Paul, George and Ringo Show.
Personally, I don't see any reason to form that group again. Paul has his new band, I have a new band, no doubt George will have a band and Ringo will have a band. People keep talking about it as if it's the end of the earth. It's only a rock group that split up. It's nothing important. You know, you have all the old records there if you want to reminisce. You have all this great music, I think Paul is selling more records than he ever sold as a Beatle. I'm selling more than I ever sold as a Beatle, as an individual. Between the four of us, we're selling many more records than the Beatles ever did, obviously. It's like a rugby team. Sometime you have to get married and leave the boys on a Saturday night. That's how it is.
John Lennon, as usual, providing a concise situation report. The group was finished.
The Beatles as a group, I'm not talking about them as a group, but as musicians, as composers, I think there'll never be, ever, a group like this again.
Vic Lewis, managing director of NEMS.
I think that Paul and John will go on writing songs. They'll still be as great on their own, and George as well today. And they'll leave this mark that they set on the British scene in 1963 as something that will never be wiped out. This really was the beginning of British music.
But for George Harrison, there was more to life than music.
The only purpose for being alive is to get yourself straight. Each soul is potentially divine. The goal is to manifest that divinity. And what I believe is, that liberation, that's really what I want to do, is liberate myself from this chaos and of this body. I want to be free of my body, I want to be God conscious. That's really my only ambition, and incidental is everything else.
This philosophy didn't stop the flow of great songs from his studio sessions. From his LP, All Things Must Pass, George pulled this single, which on January the 26th became number one in the United Kingdom, My Sweet Lord.
I was going to put out a single after we got everything done, and George wanted My Sweet Lord. And although I was nervous, and so was Spector, we went with him. I did, because he has to make the decision. That's why I'm saying instinctively knowing. John Lennon felt that was the best record also. I don't think in terms of records, unfortunately. I think in terms of best song, and so it went out. I was betting on the other side. I was wrong, which really is relevant to the question of an artist really knowing what's best. He really does.
Oh,
course, the record speaks for itself. He's allowed the public, you know, for the first time to see that what they thought was the basic total talent of the one-word Beatle was a collective arrangement of a lot of hard work by four fellas who I think contributed all together differently and equally in their own way.
Alan Klein. Ringo, in complete contrast to George, had produced a country album, Bukus of Blues. How did this come about?
Well, I was trying to get it together over here, which is really silly, you know. And I was trying to fly in like 12 guys from Nashville and all that rubbish. And suddenly I was playing on George's album, and Pete Drake was there. I was talking to him about it, and he said, well, look here, son, why don't you come over to Nashville? And I'll get it together in a week. And I said, oh, come on, you can't do an album in a week. It's impossible. And he says, well, Dylan's only took 2 days. So I said, OK, you go back, fix it up, and I'll fly out. And I flew out about 10 days later. We did the album in 2 nights. I did a few other tracks which we didn't put out. So I was only there like 3 days recording, you know. I'd learn 5 songs in the morning and we'd go and record 5 songs at night. It was really good, you know.
There's a honky-tonk in this town they call the Loser's Lounge, and I guess I'm a charter member, you could say. Since love has turned me down, nothing to do but hang around and listen to all the fools who come to say that life is full of heartache for a poor boy, cause a bankroll can turn his woman's head around. Drake used to try and run away or move to another town, cause anywhere a poor boy goes there's a loser's lounge.
That was Ringo scene, singing, drumming, and later on that year, more film acting in Blind Man. Paul and Linda were expecting another baby, and they too were busy recording.
We just finished an album now, and we're on to the next one already, you know, before this one's been released. So we're working hard on the music thing. But as far as performances and stuff, as I say, you know, when you've played to 56,000 in a big stadium, you know, but you can't really do much more than that, unless it's like get on Telstar and have an hour playing to everyone in the world. You know, you can't really top 56,000, you know. So that we don't have too many performance ambitions left. But the ambitions are all in the music, you know, as far as I'm concerned. It's like we started off with Love Me Do, and the second record we wanted to be better, you know, so we did Please Please, and we wanted the next one to be better. You know, and it's that's where the ambition is, to make music that satisfies us and other people, you know.
Every day she takes a morning bath, she wets her hair, wraps a towel around her as she's heading for the bedroom chair. It's just another day, slipping into stockings, stepping into shoes, dipping in the pocket of her raincoat. It's just another day.
the office where the papers grow, she takes a break, drinks another coffee, and she finds it hard to stay awake. It's just another day. It's just another day.
Paul McCartney seems, he's very happy. I would imagine he's very happy. I don't have anything to do with him, and he's living his life, and he has a wife and children. How can he not be happy? He's doing what he wants.
Paul got to the number two spot in the British charts with that on March the 8th, 1971, the same date that John issued his next single.
Paul did a good job in holding us together for a few years while we were sort of undecided what to do, you know. And I found out what to do, and it didn't really have to be with the Beatles. It could have been if they won it. But it got that I couldn't wait for them to make up their mind about peace or whatever, about committing themselves. It's the same as the songs. So I've gone ahead.
You asked for it, you got it, Toyota.
Radio 7 Costa Blanca. In de auto of op het strand.
In England, the people that bought the record were not as powerful as John hoped and were only able to lift the record to number 7 in the charts. But as John said earlier, if all their individual record sales were added together, the total came to more than they'd sold as the Beatles. Not to be left out, on April the 8th, Ringo put out his first single, which was produced by George Harrison.
It don't come easy, it's been going around for years. See, I'm a very slow writer. I usually get a first verse and then I find it impossible to get anywhere else with the song, you know, and then suddenly I'm sitting down again. I can't get up and say, well, now I'm going to write. I just have to be around a guitar or a piano with my famous three chords. And it just comes, you know. Usually what I do, if I'm in the mood, I put me tape on, if I've got a tune, and then I play the same tune like 100 times with different words, all on the tape, then I take the tape off and get it all typed out, and then I pick the lines, what I'll put together, you know.
Ringo is doing what he wants. His involvement in films and his having a number one single and not a single written by Lennon and McCartney, but one written by Ringo Starr. And I think it's nice that George Harrison produced it, you know. But here was a single by him in his own right, not a Beatle record which made it, but a Ringo Starr record which made it.
Made it, in fact, to position number 4 in Britain and number 1 in the USA. As Paul said earlier, he and Linda had been working very hard, and in mid-May, their second LP, Ram, was issued. One track from it was issued as a single in America and went to the top of the pile. Title, Uncle Albert, Admiral Halsey.
We're so sorry, Uncle Albert. We're so sorry if we caused you any pain. We're so sorry, Uncle Albert, but there's no one left at home, and I believe I'm gonna rain.
Hello,
did John think of the album?
Well, I liked the beginning of Uncle Albert. Yeah. I liked some of My Fly. He got three legs or something. Yeah. I liked a little bit about Hands Across the Water. But then it just tripped off all the time. You know, I didn't like that bit.
I've been really disappointed with his records, but I still know how great he is, and I mean, I know he's a genius, and I'll still go on buying each album and listening to it three or four times before I admit that it isn't very good for at least another dozen albums. But he's so good that I'm sure that eventually he'll get back into it and make some just brilliant records. I can't understand why Linda's in his band, you know, at the risk of being blunt, because I don't think she sings very well.
Peter Asher. The Paul McCartney fans were obviously not in agreement with these comments, as the album was the best-selling one of the month within a week of release. But that summer, Yoko's book, Grapefruit, was published in July. But she and John were undergoing considerable heartaches concerning the custody of Yoko's daughter by her previous marriage, Kyoko. George started to plan a concert in New York's Madison Square Garden to raise funds in aid of the victims of the Bangladesh War. And we'll be hearing more eyewitness accounts and music from some of those taking part in the next chapter. Paul was not involved in the concert. He was busy in Great Britain forming his new band, Wings. Johnny Moran asked him about the lineup.
We were in New York making Ram, and the drummer we were using was Denny Sywell, who's a good drummer and that, so we just continued to use Denny. And then I say rang Denny Lane when we got back to England, asked him if he wanted to be in. So that's how it's happened so far, you know.
Well, Paul, there were four of you on the last album. You've been rehearsing here today with five musicians. Is there a plan to extend the lineup of Wings?
Yes, you know, we're just sort of trying various things out at the moment. We've got a young guitarist called Henry playing with us. You know, the idea is just to get a good band that we can go around and play with, you know, so I'm not against, I'm not tight on a format or anything. I don't want three, four, five, or, you know, it can be as many as it likes, as long as it ends up sounding like a good band.
But before that good band put sound to tape, Paul and Linda issued a single in Great Britain, taken from the Ram LP.
Speed along the highway, honey,
seat of my car.
Mexico City. But listen to a daddy song. Making love is wrong. Ooh, we're just busy riding, sitting in the back seat of my.
Backseat of My Car. Also on Ram, a song that some people took as an attack on John.
Too many people going underground. Too many reaching for a piece of cake. Too many people pulled and pushed around. Too many waiting for that lucky break. That was your first mistake.
If the lyric did refer to John, he was fairly quick to put his answer on record.
So Sergeant Pepper took you by surprise.
song isn't only about Paul. It is a song in its own right anyway, you know? And
you do say you're now with living with, what is it? I can't
you live with straights and all that. Okay, so...
Everyone went, oh, wow, how could he make the quarrel so public, you know?
Oh, hell's bells. Well, I mean, listen to Ram, folks. The lyrics weren't printed. Just listen to it. I'm answering Ram. When I heard Ram, I immediately sat down and... that was your first mistake to do. You took your lucky break and broke in. Whose lucky break? We believe that we can't be wrong. Well, I believe you could possibly be wrong. And so my song was an answer to Ram. As simple as that. It was also a moment's anger, but it was written down on paper and I sang it. Because it wasn't quite as angry when I sang it in the studio because it was about 4 weeks later. We were all writing it, you know. I mean, it was just like a joke, you know. All said, oh, let's write this now, like that, you know. So, I mean, we didn't take it that seriously.
John and David Wigg. The title track on this LP was particularly outstanding.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky.
When we were doing the peace events, like the bedding and that, we said everything we do is dedicated to peace, so therefore it is even brushing our teeth, etc., etc. But we can't just keep saying peace, peace, peace all the time. But my album, Imagine, is, inverted commas, a revolutionary, peaceful album. It has the same message on that I said in Give Peace a Chance. It has the same message as my last album on, just done in different ways.
Yes, yes.
So we're still for peace, all right.
John's album also went to the top of the LP bestsellers that October, but he and Yoko were not so successful in their attempts to obtain access to see Kyoko. Yoko's former husband, Anthony Cox, had disappeared with the girl, which wasn't very conducive to John and Yoko's creativity that autumn. In November, Paul and Linda held a launching party in the Lyceum Ballroom, London, to introduce their group Wings and the LP Wings Wildlife.
With the Beatles, we stopped playing live for a while and went right into recording and did a lot of that. But I've recently decided that I miss just playing just to people, you know, and just... I mean, you know, the idea, the kind of ideas we've had, you know, it would be to really get right to people rather than even doing these big, great big seaters, you know, turning up at a place almost unannounced. I still don't know whether we can do it, you know. A lot of people say, oh, you can never do that, you're never going to get away with it. But I think, you know, the idea is like sort of turning up in a caravan somewhere, opening the back doors and blasting and then just gather a crowd. Because then the idea then is that the crowd will just be people from that area rather than all people with notebooks and stuff waiting to judge you and say, oh, I don't like that, oh, I don't like that. Take it, Tony. I was very happy with the way everyone played and the atmosphere we got and everything, you know. I think it's good.
It's a beginning, you know.
Which track on the Wings album do you think is the best example of what we can expect from Wings?
Mumbo is just the raw truth, you know. That was just us. I just said, here, it goes C to F, you know, or F to B flat, whatever it was. And I said, okay, one, two, three, and everyone just had to dive in, you know. And that take on the album is the first take.
Mumbo from the first LP by Wings. And the issue of that LP brought the year 1971 to a close for John, Paul, George and Ringo. John and Yoko were still battling to see Kyoko. Ringo was making the occasional appearance on television as well as completing Blind Man. George was editing the film and tapes from the Bangladesh concert, while Paul and Linda were preparing to take Wings on the road to meet the people. The John, Paul, George and Ringo show is in full swing. And in the next program, we'll take an up-to-date look at the four individual careers of those people who originally started The Beatles Story.
I'm riding out of my suitcase. Love.